Last week, we ended with a question. There are 24 gifts given to the Kohanim. So what is unique about the 7 gifts mentioned in the Haftarah that they specifically bring a bracha into the home? In truth, the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Lamebez Omebez, indicates that it is really the mitzvah of challah alone that triggers this bracha. So the real question becomes, what is so unique about the mitzvah of challah? Perhaps we can answer the challah is unique because it is the only one of these gifts that is performed with bread. Bread is the main support of human life, as we say in Barchi Nafshi, V'lechem levav enoish yisod. Since bread is the basic staff of life, it has a special power to bring bracha. In addition, challah has another distinction. It was the first mitzvah hatuliyah ba'aretz that Klal Yisrael fulfilled. As the Gemara says in Kesubas, Daf Chav Hei Omer Aleph, the other mitzvahs that depend on the land did not begin till after the 14 years of Yerusha v'Yeshiva, after the conquest and division of the land. But challah applied immediately. So challah stands out in 2 ways. It is connected to bread, the foundation of life, and it was the first mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael that we were able to fulfill. Perhaps that is why it carries a special power to bestow bracha. In this week's Haftarah, B'chukaisai, the Navi had rebuked the people for serving Avodah Zarah earlier. Now the Haftarah opens with Hashem Uzi Umuzi Umanusi B'yoyim Sarah, with Yirmiyahu describing Hashem as his strength and his fortress. The Radak explains that Yirmiyahu was asking Hashem to protect him from the very people he had rebuked, because they were furious with him. The Malbim, however, understands this differently. He sees it as a tefillah not for himself, but for them, that Hashem should not carry out the full punishment that they deserved. The Navi then says that in the future, even the Goyim will recognize that there is no power and no purpose in Avodah Zarah, and they will admit that what their fathers handed down to them was nothing but falsehood and emptiness. The Chazam Sofer asks a very strong question. Adam HaRishon certainly knew the truth because he was created directly by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So how did the very idea of Avodah Zarah ever begin? He explains that the original mistake was not a denial of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rather, people argued that Hashem is so exalted and so removed from direct human involvement that we need some kind of intermediary. Once that false premise was accepted, the whole concept of Avodah Zarah began to grow. But in the future, when the world will be filled with Deah Es Hashem, no one will accept such an argument, and Avodah Zarah will disappear on its own. The Navi says, Chatas Yehuda Ksuva Be'et Barzel, that the sin of Yehuda is engraved into their hearts and is not easily erased. They think about their altars and their idols with the same affection that a parent feels for a child. We find a similar idea in Sanhedrin, Daf Samach Gimel Amud Beis. But the Gemara says that the Yidden only served idols in order to permit themselves Gezela and Arias. Only by accepting a God that sanctioned such behavior could they allow themselves to descend into the level of immorality. Once they became deeply involved with Avodah Zarah, it became so deeply rooted that they were no longer able to walk away from it. There is a tragic story brought about Eliyahu HaNavi. He once found a child starving to death, the sole survivor of his family. Eliyahu told him that he could save himself if only he would say Shema every single day. But the child refused even to utter the name of Hashem. Instead, he took his Avodah Zarah, kissed it, embraced it, and eventually collapsed dead upon it. This is how deep the sickness of Avodah Zarah had become. The Navi says that Yerushalayim will be plundered by its enemies. It is described as a mountain in the middle of a field, because the people worshipped idols both in the mountains and in the fields. The people will go into Galus as a punishment for not observing Shemitah. Then comes the famous declaration, Orer HaGever Asher Yiftach Ba'Adam. Curses the person who places his trust in man and turns away from Hashem. He will be like an Arar in the wilderness, never experiencing a truly good season of growth. Rashi explains that this refers to a lonely tree, barely surviving in barren soil. Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel, however, explains it as a thorny plant whose fruit is hidden within its outer thorns. Rashi understands the pasuk as referring to those who plant and work their fields during Shemitah, trusting in the labor of their own hands to sustain them. The Radak, however, explains it differently. It refers to the kings of Yehuda, who relied on political alliances with Mitzrayim and Ashur. The Mishnah in Avos, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Chav Beis, understands his pasuk as referring to someone whose chachma is greater than his actions. In other words, he knows harba, but he does not live accordingly. He's like a tree with many branches, but with very few roots. A strong wind comes and it uprooted with ease. The Navi then says, Baruch HaGeber Sheyiftach BaHashem, V'hoy HaShem Miftachoy. They are compared to a tree planted on Yovel with abundant leaves and a constant source of water. The Gemara in Bechoris, Daf Nunhei Amud Beis, identifies Yuval as the river Pras, the Euphrates River. Rashi says that the tree described here is the Eitz HaChaim of Gan Eden. Tosfos notes that although the Pras is one of the four rivers that branch out from the river watering Gan Eden, the main river itself is the Euphrates, and the other three branch from it. The Mishnah understands this pasuk as describing someone who is maisim or greater than his chachma. In other words, his learning shapes his conduct. His Torah leads him in the proper path, and he serves Hashem the right way. Such a person is like a tree with strong and deep roots, which will not be uprooted even by a fierce storm. When the heart is diseased by a lack of betochen, only Hashem can truly perceive the sickness. The Navi then turns to those who chase wealth and riches and do not hesitate to steal and cheat in order to obtain them. They are compared to a dugar bird, the cuckoo, which sits upon the eggs of other birds until they hatch. But in the end, the fledglings do not stay, they fly away, because they do not recognize the dugar as their parent. So too, the person who accumulates wealth through dishonest means will ultimately lose everything he gained. The Navi then praises HaKadosh Baruch Hu, speaking of the Kisei HaKavod, the heavenly throne, which is aligned with the Beis HaMikdash below. We find a similar idea in Yoz Yashir, Pasuk Yud Zayin, that the Mikdash HaMaila is aligned with the earthly Mikdash. In fact, the Gemara says in Pesachim, Daf Nun Dalet Amud Aleph, that the place of the Mikdash was created before the rest of the world. Hashem is the Mikveh Yisrael, the hope of the Yidden. And those who turn away from the words of the Navi will be buried. Yirmiyahu then concludes with the famous tefillah that became the source for the bracha in Shemoneh Esrei. Refaini Hashem ve'erafe, hoishieni ve'ivosheya, ki solasasi ata. The Radak explains that Yirmiyahu had been mocked and scorned by those who opposed him, and the healing he asks for is relieved from the scorn and contempt. The Mahari Kra, however, explains that Yirmiyahu was diving to be saved from the destruction that Nebuchadnezzar would bring. And that leaves us with one final question. According to Rashi, the repeated references here to working the field during Shemitah makes this Haftarah a very natural choice for Puchukaisai, since Shemitah is a major theme in the Teichicha. But according to the Radak, most of Yirmiyahu's rebuke here is really about Avodah Zarah, with only a single reference to Shemitah. So according to the Radak, why is this specifically the Haftarah of Puchukaisai? Have a wonderful Shabbos.